or take the stage. I searched for a photo of him and found the above security cam style Where's Waldo shot, because a sighting is like seeing Sasquatch, as journalist Jeffrey Wells has written. The movie is widely reviewed, and I won't waste your time adding much to that conversation. The plot is basically when one of three sons dies in a 1950s Waco family with a brutal dad, people grieve, and the oldest son relives his sketchy memories. It's apparently based on Malick's own childhood, though as with all things Malick, details are hard to come by. But with Malick, it's not the plot, it's the themes and the execution. Themes like grace, acceptance, versus nature, aggression. Nearly every shot is mind-bendingly gorgeous, and yet naturalistic. The performances of the kids and the etching of fragmented childhood are unparalleled. There are definitely problems, like a 15-minute sideshow by Kubrick FX man Doug Trumbull about the creation of the universe that Malick had been planning since back before I wrote my article. But it's certainly a use of cinema you don't get from many Americans these days. The Coens, maybe Darren Aronofsky. But he clearly has no thought of pleasing the popcorn-eating public. Even the Coens, who have not sacrificed a whit of integrity or control, aren't this esoteric. Although Ethan was a philosophy major at Princeton, the way Malick studied it at Harvard. The Coens are also amusing themselves and us more than they're trying to express earnest treatises on the meaning of life. Funny aside, when Joel and Ethan hit the scene in 1984 with Blood Simple, they did so much press to get it on people's radars, they got sick of themselves and went into hiding, or at least diffidence. I was assigned a piece on them by Esquire, which would eventually run in Rolling Stone. And the way I ultimately got them to agree was when they found out I'd written the Malick piece, because they were obsessed with him too. They asked me to play them my painful 5-minute taped phone call with Malick when I finally located him, and I acquiesced. Hearing it, they felt so sorry for me that they allowed me to tag along with them to Cannes when they announced their next movie, Raising Arizona. To their Upper West Side office to watch them write a scene from it, and then down to the set of the movie. So, I have Malick to thank for that. So how did I get to Malick? A little luck, and a lot of shoe leather, which back in pre-internet days of 1985 meant long-distance phone calls. Some of the people in his camp were of the viewpoint that if Terry didn't want to talk, neither did they. But some people spoke to me, and then gave other people the thumbs up. I remember meeting the actress Brooke Adams in her New York apartment, and she clearly had never had an acting experience like working with Malick, and had had no idea how the movie was going to turn out. Martin Sheen wanted to talk because Malick basically made his career. Malick's college classmate Wally Shawn didn't want to talk, but his answering machine message rejecting me was so great, and so Wally Shawn, that I quoted it to lead the article, which may or may not have pissed him off. Editor Billy Weber, one of five editors listed on Tree of Life, was incredibly helpful. And Bill Weld, who had been a roommate in college and would later end up governor of Massachusetts, was very useful without having any movie knowledge at all. Many more people turned me down than talked to me. Typical was the reaction of Sissy Spacek, who starred in Badlands and married Malick's art director Jack Fisk. I just want to check this with Terry first. Do you know how I can get in touch with him? But when you're reporting a story like this, it's not about getting the big names, or even the quantity. It's about getting the right person. And the guy who provided my rosebud turned out to be another college classmate, Jacob Brackman, who had served as a producer on both Malick's films. When I got the okay to go meet with him, I did some research and discovered that Brackman, who at the time was just over 40, had an amazingly wide-ranging resume. Staff writer for The New Yorker in his 20s, including a 25-page essay about the meaning of The Graduate, then film critic at Esquire. In 1970, he wrote a poignant op-ed in The New York Times just a few years after college, trying to explain the meaning of the deaths of Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix, to who he perceived to be the square readers of the New York Times op-ed page, beginning, "Most likely, neither Jimi Hendrix nor Janis Joplin meant much of anything."